We are so glad you're with us this morning. Those of you that are visiting, it's great to have you with us. And those of you that are returning home or you're with us normally, it's good to have you. Good to see you again. Just to kind of fill you in where we're up to, we are in the middle of a story about Joshua. And we are in as exciting time as a church because we are looking to move into another building that we've just purchased, as you know, Venue 2. And this series kind of is running alongside that on a Sunday morning where we're looking at the story of Joshua, particularly the first few chapters where God tells Joshua to go into the promised land and to take possession. And this morning you can see I've got the story about crossing the Jordan River. Now I was thinking actually I might have got the wrong story because a bit later on there's a story where the sun stands still. So I was thinking it might be good to preach on that because now that we see the sun, we don't want it to go anywhere, do we? It's good to see the sun, isn't it? But this story is about moving. So it reminded me a few years ago, Helen and I, when we first got married, we lived in Exeter, and we had some friends who were staying in an apartment block. And like us, they were renting an apartment in an apartment block. And over a course of time, they begin to fall out with some of their neighbours. Their neighbours, we wasn't going very well with them, and they kind of had a bit of problems with their landlord. Some of you students probably know about that, when your landlord doesn't always do the things that you want them to do. And it got to a point where one weekend they said to us, we are going to go and try and find somewhere else to live. So we said, oh, great, that's fine. I hope you have a successful weekend. So Sunday evening, about 6 o'clock in the evening, me and Helen are just settling down thinking about the week ahead. And we get a phone call. And it was my friend. And he said, Jez, we found somewhere to live. And the person said that we can move in immediately. I was like, oh, that's great. That's brilliant. So you're going to miss work tomorrow. He said, no, we can move in immediately, like now. And we're like, oh. And I was beginning to think, I know where this conversation is going. He said, can you help us move? And we were like, okay, great. Now, at the time, let's have a look. There's us as movers. At the time, we had a little Vauxhall Nova. Do you remember those little sporty cars? And we thought, this is not really going to be doing much for the job. So thankfully, we live fairly near Helen's parents. So we quickly ran down to their place in Exworth, about 20 minutes away, grabbed their car, came back. And from about 6 or 7 o'clock on a Sunday night, we spent the next about 6 hours going back and forth across Exeter. Thankfully, we weren't arrested by the police, even though the back of the car was open. There were sofas and chairs and cupboards and boxes. And we did about 7 or 8 journeys. And just after midnight, we got home having helped our friends to move. And it taught us that moving is a little bit stressful, isn't it? Moving can cause those kind of feelings to come. And we pick up the story today where Joshua has been told by God a couple of weeks ago with Julian, he said, get ready. He got the 10-minute warning, as it were. You're about to move. And last week we heard from Matthew about how they wanted to just kind of get confirmation that they were doing the right thing, and they sent spies into the land and they came back with a great report because they found a woman of faith and a woman of mercy and a woman of action. And so this morning we are reminded that God has said to Joshua, be strong and courageous, have no fear, do not be afraid and do not be troubled, for the Lord your God is with you. We are in a year of promise. 2014 is a year of promise, and Joshua gets his promise 3 times in the first chapter to say, you're going to do it, it's okay, I'm with you. And this morning we're going to look at what that meant and how it unpacked. Now, I don't know about you, but there's a guy in the church here called John, and every so often on Facebook he puts one of these WAI, and I never knew what it stood for, but it means where am I? So we just want to see where we are. As you can see here, they started over here in a place called Abel. And what's going to happen is we're going to pick up the story of where they go down to the river, go across the river, and then they go up to Gilgal. It just gives a little bit of a map of what we're looking at in this chapter, in this next section of the story. And it's quite exciting to see what is going to happen and how the children of Israel were ready for action. So let's pick up the story and let's read together. And it says this in Joshua chapter 3. Early the next morning, Joshua and all the Israelites left Acacia Grove and arrived at the banks of the Jordan River, where they camped before crossing. And as we go through the story, there are just some interesting things to kind of pick out and to talk about, aren't there? Because this story is packed with so much good stuff that we can learn. And when you go into your small groups on Tuesday, you're going to have a lot of fun just unpacking a bit more some of the things that we talked about. We read there that Joshua got up early in the morning. And it reminded me that Jesus often got up early in the morning. Now, that's not everybody's cup of tea, is it? Let's be honest. Some people are good at getting up in the morning and other people are not. But what he talks about is that actually the children of Israel, they knew that they were doing and they were dedicated. to what God was asking them to do. And that for them, that dedication meant that they got up in the morning and they were ready to move out and ready to go down and make the journey down to the river's edge. And so it's just an encouragement to us, isn't it, that as I look around this church, I see people that are dedicated. And there's lots of different ways that we can do that. And it plays itself out in different ways of how we operate as a family, as we operate as people. But what Joshua did was he made to find some time where he could spend an extra bit of time with God. When something big is about to happen, when you're about to have some exams, you do a bit of extra work. When you're about to move house, you get things a bit more orderly and in boxes so you're ready to go. When you're going to change jobs, you finalize your things so you hand on well to someone else and you think about the next thing. And whatever situation we find ourselves in life, there is a kind of a dedication. And as a church, we are getting dedicated. We're a people of dedication. And it's encouraging us to say, keep going. Keep being committed and dedicated to the things of God and the things that we're going ahead. There's a dedication and a commitment that we see in this church as we move along. The next thing we realize is that when they got to the water's edge, they saw what a lot of people have seen over the last few weeks. The Bible tells us that the water of the river was in flood. It was in harvest season. Now, what that means was God had got his timing wrong. This was the worst time ever to try and cross the Jordan. Because it says that when it was a dry season, the Jordan would only have been about 300 or 400 meters wide, and you could have got in and just waded in on your feet and so on. But now the water was in full flood, it was really wide, and the waves were gushing over, and the Bible tells us quite a few times that it was harvest time. And again, that's just an encouragement to us, isn't it? Church, this is harvest time. We've heard stories about people who are open to our conversations about Jesus. Our friends and our neighbours, we've talked to them before about some of the things about God, and we've shared some of the stories, and there is an openness, a new season of openness where we can say there is a harvest. We want to see a harvest of people who come into relationship with Jesus. We want to see a harvest of people getting healed of some of the things that have infirmed them and sickness. We want to see a harvest of people having their marriages mended and having their children sorted and all the different things, all the things in our lives that mean a lot to us. We want to see a harvest of those things. And God says, this is harvest time. And as we move across the Jordan River, it's a harvest time. And he's saying to the children of Israel, this is the season that you're in. And it's an encouragement to us that we are in a season of harvest. There's the river. These are actual pictures. So you can see this is what it normally looks like, and this is what it looks like in the harvest season. You know, Jesus said, didn't he, in Matthew, that the fields are ripe unto harvest, but the laborers are few. And as I look in this church, we are not a huge church in terms of numbers, but everybody here plays their part. Everybody here does something, is committed to the work. And it's so encouraging for us that where we are as a church, this is a harvest season. We are out laboring in the fields, wherever we are, in our workplaces, with our neighbours, with our families, with our college mates, with our roommates, with our school friends. Wherever we are, we can be talking about Jesus, sharing the love of Jesus, and God is going to bring the harvest in. You know, often, another thing that is said, if we go back to the verse here, it says this. 3 days later, the Israelite officers went through the camp, giving these instructions to the people. When you see the Levitical priests carrying the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God, move out from your positions and follow them. Since you've never traveled this way before, they will guide you. Stay about half a mile behind them, keeping a clear distance between you and the Ark. And we're going to look at what that means, but one of the things that he says there is you're going to go a new way. Now the children of Israel have been traveling, they've been wandering in the desert. So in a sense, everywhere they'd gone was a new way. They'd never been there before. But the Bible tells us in Exodus and in Numbers that God had guided them by a pillar of cloud. There'd been a pillar of cloud in the daytime and a pillar of fire at night, and that's how they'd been guided. But now they got to the promised land and they're about to cross over. There's going to be a new way that they're going to be taught. There's going to be a new way that God's going to guide them. And it's here. He said he's going to do it by they follow the ark. That ties in with what Adam was talking about, where we need to follow. Not follow just to, like simple Simon says, but follow the ark of God. When you see it move out, follow from that position. And for all of us, there is a comfortableness in the familiar, isn't there? There is that, I like things the way they are. I like sitting on this side instead of this side. Or I like having my coffee and then having a sugar, and I don't come into the building until I've had my coffee. And there's a familiarity about things, and that's good and that's nice. But sometimes we get a little bit afraid, don't we, by the new. The new, what's it going to look like? What's our Sunday morning going to look like in Venue 2? What's it going to look like when we move into our new house? Where are we going to put things? When I get my new job next year, when I haven't even thought about my job yet, what am I going to do? What's it going to look like? And sometimes we can be a little bit afraid and a little bit worried about the new. And God is saying to these people, I know that. Since you've never traveled this way before, they will guide you. The ark will guide you. And just to try to put in the perspective, the ark of God represented not just the box that carried the law, but it represented the presence of God among them. It was representative, it was a holy box, and it represented the presence and the manifest presence of God with them at that time. God wanted to be with his people. And what he's saying is, when you go in the new place, I'm with you. I'm guiding. And that's another great encouragement for us this morning, that when we go a new way, when there are new things ahead, when there are things to be crossed over, when there are things that we need to do, for I'm about to do something new. See, I've already begun. Do you not see it? I will make a pathway through the wilderness, and I will create rivers in the dry wasteland. There is a new that God has done for us. One of the next things that God says is to purify themselves, get themselves ready. And for me, one of the things that I was thinking about for getting themselves ready is that it's easy to be distracted, isn't it? When we are moving out as a church, when we are looking to go into Venue 2, when you're looking to move house, when you're looking to revise, how many of you sit, some of the students, you sit down and revise and you're like, oh yeah, there's that great thing on YouTube someone recommended, or there's that sports program that I wanted to watch, or it's easy to be distracted, isn't it? And these things that I put there, they are fun. They're fun to do, Twitter, Pinterest, Facebook, but they can be a little bit distracting at times, can't they? And when God says, get yourselves ready, prepare yourself, I'm about to do something, it's just an encouragement to us that whatever we're doing, whatever you're facing, whatever the Jordan River is for you, don't allow yourself to be distracted. It's easy to get distracted. Just be aware of the things that distract you and just kind of put some helpful guards in place to help yourself so that you don't get easily distracted. Then he says what's going to happen is the leaders, the ark, is going to be carried by the leaders, the priests. And Joshua's told to pick 12 people, one from each tribe. And it's really interesting because there is an element of when something is happening in a church or a family, someone has to take the responsibility. In a family, it's normally the mum and dad who take the responsibility of moving house. Or when you're a student, one of the problems, often one of the challenges, is that we have to take responsibility for learning ourselves. When you're a church, there's a responsibility on the leadership as we look to go into Venue 2 and to have another building alongside this one and for the ministry that's going to happen there. And there is an element where when you are in that position, there is a responsibility that God gives you. And it's right that you have to carry that responsibility. But if you notice in the Bible, it says that Joshua chose 12 men, one from each of the tribes. In other words, there was a togetherness there to support those who were carrying the responsibility. And so it encourages us that whatever role you have in the church or whatever part you play, we all play a part together to support the responsibility. You see, the togetherness means we share the responsibility. We share, we can pray, we can, when they say, let's help out and do this, we do that. And I see that in this church. Everybody is serving in some form. Sometimes people are up the building, some people in the charity shop, some people are going to hopefully be in the cafe that we're going to open in the new building. Everybody is doing something, and it's really encouraging. There is a shared responsibility. And the Bible talks about that in this story, and I see it. And I'm just encouraging us again that these are great things that we see in the promise. So, great things that we see in the story. So here comes the promise. God says this, the priests will carry the ark of the Lord of all the earth. As soon as their feet touch the water, the flow of water will be cut off upstream and the river will stand up like a wall. So they've got down to the river, the people have gone through the tent, said, this is what you do. When you see the ark, that's when you're going to go. And then God says, this is the promise. Ark, when it's time to go, you move out. And when you get to the water, when you get to the flood harvested water, it's time to move out. And I'm going to do a mighty work. I'm going to do a powerful miracle and make the water stand up like a wall. Now, isn't it true that when we often journey with God, We would like to have all the faith and everything ready before we go, wouldn't we? But God's saying here, when you go in faith, then I'm going to come in power. There's a step of faith that we need to take, and we'll look at that in a bit minute. But God has said, follow. So here comes the point. What happens is the people rise early, and the ark goes down to the water. And as I said, the water was still wild. It's really important that we understand that. It wasn't like they got down and everything was easy. Everything was crazy. The water was flooded. The water was in a flood season. And the Bible says they still had to take a step of faith into the water. But the Bible tells us that as they took a step of faith into the water, as soon as their feet of the priests who were carrying the ark touched the water above that point began backing up a great distance. They took the step and God showed up in his power and did an amazing miracle. The Bible says that the water was stacked up 12 miles up the stream at a place called Adam. So the 12 number keeps appearing. And again, it talks about the completeness. God was completely in control of the water, in control of what was happening, and making a way for these people to go through. Now, if you remember, if you were listening for a while back when we started the series and talked about Joshua, we're looking at probably about 1.2 to 1.5 million people. This is not a small number or people like us going down and having a picnic or even walking to Carithin. There was a massive number of people who had to get across. And God stacks the water right up 12 miles away and clears away in his power and says, this is the miracle. I told you I would do it. And now I've done it. And that's true for God, isn't it? When God promises something, doesn't he do it? Isn't it encouragement to us that what God says, that's why we can rely on the promises of God, that when God promises, he always comes through and he does the things that he says he's going to do. So what happens is the priests go into the middle of the dry bed now with the ark of God. Remember, they're following the ark. Their eyes are fixed on the ark. And the people begin to pass through. And they pass through while the ark is in the middle of the Jordan River. And there's another encouragement for us, isn't there? When you're going through trials, when you're going through challenges, when you're going through things that are difficult, and often we cry out and say, God, where are you? Where are you? The Bible tells us where he is. He's right in the middle of that situation with you. His feet are right standing there in the middle of any challenge, any difficulty, any obstacle that you're going through. God is right there in the middle, standing there with you, next to you. Isn't that encouraging? I find that encouraging. I think that's great. So the people all pass through onto the other side and there is a great celebration. All the people go through safely. The water is stacked up. Now the ark is still in the middle. And Joshua is told by God, tell 12 men, there's the number 12 again, to go back into the water and to pick up a memorial stone. Because what they're going to do is they're going to say, we're going to remember this moment. We are going to commemorate. We're going to celebrate the miracle that God had done. You see, all these people that passed through, they hadn't experienced the Red Sea that when God had delivered the people out of Egypt. They hadn't experienced that. This was a new thing for them. But God wanted them to remember so they could pass it on to their children and their children and tell others about what God had done. So 12 people go back into the river right at the point of the miracle, right at the point where God had done his miracle. That's the place of our testimony. They picked up the stones right from the point of our testimony. And our testimonies are what God has done. They're the place of what God has done. Isn't that great? It's an encouragement to us when we tell our stories. It's about what God has done. And they pick up a stone and they come out of the water. And actually, there's a little verse that is there's another monument as well. Joshua goes into the riverbed and he builds a little monument with 12 stones right at the point where the priests were standing with the ark. It says it's still there. Now, I don't know how many divers have gone down like Indiana Jones to try and find the stones that are still there. But it says that those stones are there to this day. That's what the Bible says. So therefore, it must be true. And they are still there under the water to commemorate that that was the point where the people passed through. But there's also, as the people move through, there is a commemoration of stones and a building where they're going to remember. It's a memorial stone of what God has done. And I was thinking about this, and there are lots and lots of things that we can learn from this passage. But I've just got three very simple things in one sense that struck me that I want to share with you this morning. And I think they're helpful. And the way that I kind of thought about it was, it is a journey. And many of us, we do make the journey from England into Wales. And I was thinking it's a little bit like making the journey from England into Wales. When you're on the M4, probably at some point you're going to make a service station stop. We often like to stop at Lee Delamere. You get a Costa Coffee, Burger King, an M&S. You can get it all there. Have a quick bathroom stop. But, you know, service stations are not places of final destination, are they? They're places of where you just go refuel, and then you're going off again. You're ready to set out. And when you come into Wales, you have to cross a bridge if you're coming in that road. You have to go across the water. And the story was talking about going across the water. So there's the setting out. And there's that junction where you can, if you come in on the M4, it's really funny. If you're a little bit worried about coming into Wales, you can always just take a little detour and go down to Devon or go up to Birmingham. But if you're, you know, they give you that final decision before you get there, just in case you want to change your mind. And then there's the crossing over. And then, like all of us, there's a sign that we're in Wales, isn't there? There is a sign that says, you've reached. Paying your money is your sign that you've crossed over. And so, for us, we've got these simple, helpful things that are going to help us to understand what these children of Israel were learning and what they went through. So the first thing is this. When you're on the journey, what do you focus on? The children of Israel were encouraged to look at the ark, and the ark represented God. And so the simple thing is first, whatever situation you're in, whatever you're doing in your life, whatever stage you're at, all of us can put our focus on God. You know, it's easy, isn't it, to be distracted by the circumstances. This won't happen. I don't know how this is going to work out. I'm moving job. I don't know what it's going to be like. I'm moving house. I've got my exams. Next year, I don't know what I'm doing. There's this situation and this problem in my family. I don't know how it's going to work out. We've all got these things that we think about, and God is encouraging us to put our focus and our sight on God. And he's saying, look at me. Because God guided the people. God went before the people. And when we focus on God, we don't focus on a God who just says, look at me and everything will be okay. He says, no, I'm going to guide you. I'm going to go before you. God promised them, when the ark goes, then you follow. We don't have to try and make the way ourselves. We follow God who's guiding us. And then, where is God in the situation? He's right in the middle of any situation and any challenge and any circumstance that you're going through. He's right in the middle of it. And it's again an encouragement. Not only will I guide you, but I will show you and I'll be with you right in the middle of it. It's a little bit like an aeroplane. I haven't flown an aeroplane, but from my limited understanding of aeroplanes, is that when you set out, you can't see the destination where you're going. You're just sitting there and you know enjoying in the flight. But the distance could be thousands of miles away. But the computer is set on a course of where it's going. They set the compass, and even, I don't know if, you know, when you've been on these long-haul flights, it tells you it's going to take 7 hours and 28 minutes. And I always think, how do they know how exact it's going to be? But the technology is amazing that they can do that. It can tell you exactly down to the minute how long it's going to take to get there with wind speed and all the other things. And when the plane takes off, the direction of the course of it is fixed on where it's going. And God says, focus on me. Fix your destination. Fix your life course. Fix whatever situation you're going through. Fix your gaze on me. Yes, there are going to be worries. There are going to be doubts. There are going to be fears all around you. There's going to be a bit of turbulence on the way. That may be the case, but keep your eyes fixed on me. And it's an encouragement to us that whatever situation we're going through, we can keep our eyes fixed on God, because he will help us to get where we need to go. The second thing is this, and this keeps coming up time and again, it's an encouragement to us. When the priest got down to the water's edge, they still had to take a step of faith. And God is encouraging us to take a step of faith. Hebrews 11 says, without faith, it's impossible to please God. And God wants us to put our faith in him and to trust him. And that's not easy, is it? Let's be honest. It's not easy. Often we feel like my faith is zero. I don't have any faith. I struggle. We all struggle with times when we feel a lack of faith and we have questions and we don't believe so well. But God is encouraging us in our faith. And what he says is this, that Jesus said to Jesus said to his disciples, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed. So I did some homework. You see that? That's the mustard seed. Look how small it is. You probably can't see it if you're at the back. I don't blame you. That's how small a mustard seed is. And Jesus said, that size faith moves mountains. Isn't that amazing? How often do we feel that our faith is that small? Virtually non-existent. It's so small. And God says, when you have faith that big, Jesus said, when you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, move, and it will move into the sea. And Jesus is saying, your faith doesn't need to be big. You see, our faith is not dependent on what we think, because what we think often is, we think this is impossible. But faith says, what we think is impossible, we know a God who can make it possible. We can trust and put our confidence in a God who makes things possible. Now, the other day, we were down at Venue 2, clearing up some of the things there on the side. And there was this ivy on the side of the wall. And I'm not a garden expert, so this is a limited knowledge, but I'm sharing it with you because I learned something. I thought it was very helpful. This ivy, you can pull it off, but it grows back again. Now, this stuff goes on walls, houses, trees, anything it can. It grabs onto it, and it grows on it. Now, this stuff can be not very helpful, from what I understand. It's not very, sometimes it looks quite pretty, but it's not very nice for the garden or the wall or whatever it is you've got. And it grows back. If you pull it off, it just grows back again. So what someone told me is you need to spray it with glyphosate. There's this special stuff that you can spray it, and then when you take it off, it'll go down into the roots and it will never come back. And I thought, that is what faith does. That's what a promise of God does to our faith. You see, often we have something that we know that God is telling us. God is encouraging us. God encourages all of us in different circumstances. And sometimes the circumstances look impossible. And we have all those questions and those doubts and those fears. And that's normal. But God says, spray it with a promise. The promise is something that you can guarantee and put your faith in. And the promise of God is a spray that we can spray onto the ivy of our questions and our doubts when we have struggles with what we're going through. So I was just thinking that when you have those situations, you can spray a promise of God. If you're going into a new venture, you don't know what the future holds. God says, I will never leave you nor forsake you. If you're going through the difficult times, God says, I'm going to be right there with you, like he did to the children of Israel. When things are going well, the promise of God to rejoice when things are going well and be grateful and be thankful. There's a promise of God, and we can spray our doubts and our fears and our worries and the things that surround our heads and come into our minds, we can spray them with the promise of God. So I thought that was really encouraging. You know, a couple of weeks ago, Julian said that there was, if you said one of the things that he said was, a promise of God mingled with faith equals action. And the word mingled there thinks of like stirring it up. And it's another way of thinking about when we have a hold on to a promise of God and we mingle it with faith, then something is going to happen. God is going to do something because God is a God who does miracle after miracle. And sometimes it seems impossible, but with God, everything is possible. And the last thing is that they were told to tell their story. It's time to tell the story. And all of us have a story to tell, don't we? All of us have a story of what God has done. God said to the children of Israel, you're going to tell a story. One, because God did a great work here. God did something amazing in this place. And he held the waters back and he delivered all the children of Israel. Remember, Rahab had talked about it. She said, we've heard what God did at the Red Sea. So she said the town of Jericho, and we'll read about the story of Jericho in a few weeks' time, they were all quivering about what God had done at Egypt, and they're probably all looking out over the wall thinking, oh my word, we're now seeing what God's doing here. There was an amazing miracle of what God was doing. And that was happening right in front of them. And our story is to tell people about what God is doing in our lives. The second thing he says is you've got to tell your children's children. And he's just encouraging us that we have children in the church, we have children in our families, is to tell other people the story of God, to build faith. You see, when you tell your story, it builds faith in people. People go, I can identify with that. And actually, yes, if it happened to you, then I can pray that it happens to me. And it builds faith in our hearts when we hear what God has done. One of the great things I love about small groups, every week we go to small group and so different people are sharing. And these stories, they're not like huge where I got £1 million or this happened or that happened. But I don't think there's anything like a small story with God. Everything is big to God because it's important to us. And when you hear the story of what is happening in different people's lives and they share some of the more personal things that are happening in a small group, when there's a small community together, it's so encouraging. It builds my faith. It encourages me to go and pray more. It encourages me to be thankful for what God has done for me. I'm often encouraged when I come back from small group because of the things that I've heard, the story that I've heard. And people just tell me what God did. And then they tell us, well, what did God do? How did it make us feel? And I just put these three simple things on there to help us. When you're telling a story, it doesn't have to be a long story. What did God do? What was the thing that he did that you're testifying about, that you're telling about? What did God do? How did it make you feel? And what does that tell you about God? Let me give you an example. A few weeks ago, I had a phone call from someone in my family, and a girl who was in youth with me many years ago, who now a lady, she had had a baby just after Christmas, and after having the baby, there had been some complications, and she was beginning to get very ill. Then her lung collapsed, and she was taken into hospital, and she was on a life support machine. She was in a coma, so she's got this new little baby. She's in a coma, life support machine, and the doctors had told her family that things are not going well and to prepare for the worst. And I got this phone call to say, can you pray? Now, I'm not in this situation. There was nothing that I could do, and yet there was everything that I could do. Because often we think prayer is the last resort, but actually prayer is everything. Because it's not about me, it's about God. And I'm just talking to God and asking him on behalf of this friend of mine from years ago who I know well and my similar age to me. And I was praying for the family and I was saying, I don't want that young lady to die. I don't want that to happen. I don't want that to be the case. I don't know how you're going to do it, God, but I believe you can do it. But my faith wasn't big. It was only the size of the mustard seed. It was only a little faith. But what I did was I said, I'll pray. And I committed to pray at the same time every day for that person until I heard the news. And about 10 days later, I heard the news that she was beginning to recover, that she'd come out of the coma. She was off the life support machine. She was still in hospital and they were fixing the things that were wrong, but she was recovered, she was awake, she was able to be with her daughter that was born, and that she was making excellent progress. That's what God does. So what did God do? God healed my friend. That's it. That's my story. I prayed. How did it make me feel? It encouraged me to pray. It encouraged me to pray because I was helpless. I couldn't do anything, but God could. What does it tell you about God? He's pretty amazing. He heals people just because he loves us. He answers our prayers because he cares about us. He makes a way through the Jordan River when it seems impossible. That's what God does. That's the God that we serve. And so I just want to encourage you this morning that there might be some situations that we're going through. There might be situations you're going through on your own. There might be situations you're going through in your family. And just to encourage you, fix your focus on God. Keep your focus looking clearly on him and where he is and where he's guiding you. And when you're going through difficulties, he will be with you in the middle of them. Have faith. And when you struggle to have faith, spray a promise of God on those doubts and on those fears. Spray your promise so that your faith is built up and the promises of God are what keep you going. And you know that God is true to his promise. And when you come through, share your story. Tell people what God has done. Because remember the word, the root word of testimony is do it again, Lord. We want him to do it again and again and again. And so what we're going to do is this. The band is going to come up and play. And I have got a mustard seed for every one of you to take away. And they're very small and it's easy to lose. Band, if you could come up, if that's okay. And we're just going to listen to the words of the song. And then we're just going to pray. Because God knows your situation. Take a mustard seed. Take it in your hand. Whatever it is that is going on in your life right now, whether it's part of the church and it's something that involves the church and we're moving into venue 2 and we want to see venue 2 filled with new people who come to know Jesus, the harvest of people who come to know Jesus in venue 2, so that we've got activities going on here and down in Morriston. That's brilliant. If you want to relate it to something in your family or in your own life or something that's coming up this week or your future or your exams, take your mustard seed and say, God, my faith might be small, But if as long as it's as small as this, you can move a mountain. And as the musicians play, just talk to God yourself and ask him and say, Lord, give me faith. Help me to focus upon you. Build my faith. And when it's weak, spray it with a promise. And when you've come through, share your story.